Folks, welcome to another episode of Growing a Greener Keen Eye on KDLL 91.9. We're so happy you're here with us on this absolutely fantastic Central Peninsula day. Boy, we've had some rain, haven't we? And boy, oh boy, I'll tell you, we did have some rain. Checking my rain gauge out in my garden over that, 3-4 days we had rain, I had 1.6 inches of rain at my house. And boy, I have checked, stuck my fingers down the dirt, and the soil is still nice and saturated and moist down in my outside garden. A little different for the greenhouse, but that's how it goes in a greenhouse. Well, I've got a guest with me today, at least for part of the show, my friend David Regal, who has been here with me before. He's here with me today for a little while. He's got some grandpa duties to do a little later on today. He's going to have to leave a little early. But, David, welcome to Growing a Greener Keen Eye.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. In the meantime, I'm here mostly as a straight man and as the dumb question source.
I don't believe that. You know, folks, I've told you before, David is a retired landscape architect. And he knows a lot. He knows a lot about landscaping. He knows a lot about that. He did that in Florida, so the concept's the same up here. It's just that the plants are different.
Well, and the soil and the weather and, that's right, everything else.
No kidding.
We're having fun watching the fishing right now. But this is a time of the season when you're saying, what's wrong here? What's happening over there? What do you do with an inch and a half of water that you didn't
no
think
kidding.
It was coming?
No kidding. And where's it going to go?
How's your drainage? What's rotting?
Yeah. Yes, very much so, very much so. Well, David also is on the board of directors of the Central Peninsula Garden Club, and David, could you let folks know, couple days ago on Thursday, part of the benefits of being a Garden Club member is you get first choice for going to tours around local gardeners and seeing what they're doing, seeing what they're having trouble with. Well, we went to a gentleman's garden Thursday called Dennis Spindler. And David, you want to give folks a little talk about that?
I was amazed by what Dennis has been able to accomplish. Down on the bottoms, soil that you wouldn't swear could do anything with.
Dennis is down by Poacher's Cove.
Yeah, but the point being, he had an excavation, he got himself a berm, and planted a phenomenal perennial garden. And I had, you know, when you drive around, you don't say, look at all the perennial gardens. It was a real surprise to see what can get accomplished, which makes it means anybody who can pile up some dirt can have one. Again, we're dealing with the drainage, we're dealing with making soil, but it's the dynamic of that slope that he had that allowed him to do really just a beautiful. I've seen some perennial gardens living in England as long as I did, but this was a comparable. This was as good as, I mean, it wasn't almost as good. It was as good as many of them are there. And so I was, it meant that you could do a lot more than I thought. The Garden Club does a lot of vegetables, but I think we have not emphasize the flowers as much.
I know I haven't. I'm starting, and I tell you what, it really got me enthused after going to Dennis's house.
When you walk away from there, you say, well, heck, why am I looking so...
No kidding.
Why am I looking so Alaskan?
But I checked the property rolls, and his property, including his house, is like almost a quarter of an acre.
That's it. And not 5 acres.
No, it's a quarter of an acre, and then his house took up a lot of that. He's got something. Oh, my gosh.
You don't need a lot. There are all sorts of garden designs that say, okay, this is a cottage garden. I have, just the front of a cottage. So, impressive. And so we are, the Garden Club gets together and spends the winter together doing monthly meetings where we have experts come and tell us what we could be doing or should have done or might do. Coming up in September, our first meeting is going to be on the storage of what you're going to be producing this year in an old, very old technique of a cold storage. of actually digging a hole in the ground. I thought it was interesting. I'm struggling with the name. Come on.
Root cellar. Yeah.
Thank you. It just made me think of when we're going to be talking about root cellars in a place that should be famous for the native Alaskans using cold storage for their salmon storage over the, you know, their caches. So we've got a long history of dealing with how to maintain our goods over the winter.
Sure, and I know I can't remember who it was, but I saw a speaker on the UAF. If anybody wants to look at some good UAF videos, if you go to YouTube. And Heidi Rader, who's been on the show, she's an Extension mm-hmm. Center employee up there. Mm-hmm. She had a show with a local lady in Fairbanks who, 30 or 40 years ago, her and her husband dug a root cellar.
Right.
So they've got one in Fairbanks.
In Fairbanks. And don't have just frozen potatoes.
Right.
It's
amazing.
How do you do that?
That's exactly right. Well, you know, and one of the things up here that, you know, especially like somebody in Florida, lower 48, they don't, now, northern parts, but, you know, one of the code requirements, really the best practices is burying water lines and sewer lines at least 10 feet deep.
Yes, exactly. And we're talking in Fairbanks, we're dealing with insulated lines
and utilidors.
Yeah.
I know Eielson Air Force Base up there, all their utilities are in heated utilidors.
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Or they'll freeze. So yeah, you're right. How do you build a root cellar in solid ice?
We'll find out in September.
Yeah, that's right. Do you know who that is going to be speaking yet?
It's going to be a panel of three different experts.
Oh, okay.
I don't have their names right in front.
Oh,
of
yeah,
me.
And they've got root cellars in the local area.
Yep, they've
here?
Done it.
Wow,
they've done
cool.
it, and they can tell us how. And we'll have to see what variation there is between the three of them. You know, like. We'll see who thinks they've got the best root cellar.
No kidding.
Yeah. But before the September meeting, on August 31st, we've got even better things happening. What was that? Tell me.
That's the Central Peninsula Garden Club picnic at Soldotna Creek Park.
It's a garden club, yes. It's actually a picnic that at the both we've actually gotten both of the pavilions in Soldotna at the park, so you won't be able to miss us. But that's one of the features of joining the club, and it's easy. We have a website, sinpingardenclub.org, and that'll take you everywhere you need to go.
Sure, and one of the things that's cool, folks, is on that website, too, if you want a garden club T-shirt, hat, kids' shirt, there's a bunch of, we've got the original logo, a new logo, the moose logo. You can get kids clothes.
Yeah.
And it's pretty, and they're made locally too.
It's a local source.
Yeah.
And of course you'll want one if you become a member.
But that's exactly right.
But you need to be a member. You need to get into this really, really, one of the friendliest and most, inviting groups that I've ever been involved with.
And I can't remember if Marty and I were gone or why we missed that. One of the last shows of the season was Standing Room Only.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Standing Room Only at Kenai Peninsula College.
Exactly.
Which has worked out real well for having the meetings there.
We had a nice sale, too.
Yeah.
The plant sale worked out well.
Worked out
so,
great.
So, yeah, being from Florida and in Alaska, I'm learning a lot. But no matter where you are, we're always dealing with challenges to being a gardener.
Right. And let's make sure folks know it's not like you just got here. You've been up here for, what, like 7 years now?
Yeah. That doesn't qualify for anything.
And one thing to remind folks too about the, and correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, for the picnic on August 31st, 1 o'clock, Soldotna Creek Park, is it's not just to show up. the garden club's going to provide the meat, right?
Yes.
But everybody's supposed to...
It's a potluck.
Like, but yeah, bring
it's
in a
potluck,
dish.
But also it's for members. Right. But you can join there.
Yeah. Join, so, join there.
So if you are curious, it's a way of getting to see what we look like, I suppose.
Right.
Yeah.
And a few other announcements I want to make real quick, too, is don't forget, even though we've had a lot of rain, you know, as the sun comes out, we still get into that fire danger. And if you've got some dead kill or brush or whatever, don't forget that slash pile, a free dump just north of the soccer fields going out of Kenai, that's open from Thursday to Sunday from 10 to 6. They got a guy there that monitors it, and you can dump all your, if you're uncomfortable with burning it yourself, being careful, get that permit. And but yeah, that's don't forget, folks, that's open. We've got the 4-H thing. Well, the same way I lost my thought on what it would be.
Yep.
Expo on the 26th through the 28th, and that is at the Soldotna Sports Center. So be sure and check that out. That's coming up this next weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then don't forget, now this is a little ways out, but we've got the Harvest Moon Festival coming up on September 21st. And if you want to, if you're a vendor or if you want to just attend, it's really great. A lot of our, there's a lot of how-to there. There'll be the food trucks. And then there's also a lot of our local gardens, our farms will be setting up there. And
it's the end stinking end of the season.
Yep, September 21st.
Well, yeah, that good old Alaska.
And in the past,
you've had your chance.
Yeah, and I don't know if they haven't asked me yet this year, but in the past I've done seminars on how to grow potatoes in containers. I may or may not be doing it again. I don't know. If they want me to, I will. If they don't ask me, I won't be doing it. And that's okay too. So anyway, I've got a little bit of good news here from the standpoint of, you know, I've talked about this before, but one of the things that we're doing here for the time being on Growing a Greener Kenai is I have David, I don't think I talked to you about this one.
No.
A giveaway.
Oh, it's the news to me.
A giveaway, yes. It is. You have to sign up for it, but what we've got for you with the incredible courtesy of Sarah at Kenai Feed, Sarah has provided us with a $100 gift certificate
Egad.
To Kenai Feed, and for you to have a chance to win that, all I need for you to do is to send me an email at growingagreenerkenai@kdll.org. Be sure and have your name, address, and phone number on it. And what I will do is, this is I've done this before like this, is everybody who sends me that email, and you've got basically almost 2 weeks to send me the email. The last date to get them in will be July the 2nd, and then on the July 3rd show, basically 2 weeks.
August.
Yeah. August the 2nd. And then on the August 3rd show of Growing a Greener Kenai, I will be announcing a winner. And the way I'm going to pick the winner is depending on how many entries we get. What I like to do is I put everybody's name in a spreadsheet, and then I sort it about five different ways. I sort it by first name, by last name. I get them all mixed up. And then what I do is whatever number in that Excel spreadsheet that your name lands on, then I use a random number generator.
Mm.
If we get 60 entries, I'll have that random number generator pick from 1 to 60. In that range, you hit the button, it does it beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop, and out spits a number, and whoever has that number will win the $100 gift certificate from Kenai
Feed. That is worth putting your fingers on the keyboard and getting an email sent. I mean, they're not asking you to do any more than that.
That's it. That's it.
It would be good if you were a member of the KDLL, right?
It would be nice. Yeah, it would be nice if you were a member of KDLL and a member of the Central Peninsula Garden Club.
There you go. Now, wait a minute. Now you're putting a thumb on the scale.
Well, the My dad used to be a butcher.
Not much of us.
Yeah.
Well, so anyway, it's a nice thing for Sarah to do, and that's a wonderful place to go. I love going there just to see what's around the corner. There's so many different things that you can walk away with.
Oh, but Kenai Feed, you can get your soil amendments,
equipment, tools,
rabbits,
rabbits,
beekeeping supplies.
Sarah,
and when I was there, Sarah was actually loading up a high tunnel
to go install.
Well, nope. She actually was delivering it to the people, and they were going to build it, put it together themselves.
But oh, boy.
She was putting all the parts together on their truck and then flatbed trailer. But, in fact, I like to go out and just say hi to Sarah and just walk around. My wife loves to go. Marty loves to go with me when the chicks are there.
Mm-hmm.
And she goes back and watches the little baby chicks. And then when we were there the other day, some guy had his little girl and their little boy in there. They wanted to go see the rabbits. Stopped in to see the rabbits.
Right.
But, yeah, you can get the soil amendments there. You can get feed there. You can get pretty much whatever you need. So anyway, we want to thank Sarah for donating that $100 gift certificate. And don't forget, it's very simple. Just an email to me at growingagreenerkenai, all one word, at kdll.org. Give me your name, your address, and your phone number, and you might be the lucky winner of a $100 gift certificate from Kenai Feed. And there again, Sarah has been so good to support the garden club. And David, do you have any numbers yet on how the amendment sale went?
No, it hasn't come in yet. At least not in my mind.
Yeah.
It hasn't gotten to me.
Yeah, and the club's first board meeting will be coming up in August.
It'll be in August.
Yeah, so maybe in my later August show, I can let you know how that. But Sarah has always supported the Garden Club just so well.
Mm.
So anyway, if you need any of these options, any of these items, Kenai Feed is a place you can go check it out.
And it fits into the theme here when we're talking about, like, what went wrong with your garden. Well, you didn't get this, you didn't get that, you didn't put the right amount of this on it, you didn't give it enough of that or this. Well, she's got all those.
Sure, things. And you know, one of the things that some people don't realize, too, is Kenai Feed is also, I guess you would say, like the clearinghouse for equipment through the Kenai Peninsula Soil and Water Conservation District. You can go down there, you can rent a potato planter, you can rent a manure spreader, you can rent hand tools. They've got all these tools. You go down there and you can check the Soil and Water Conservation Channel website, and you can see if you need. So a lot of these things, you know, that you don't need very often, you can go down to Kenai Feed and check them out. Courtesy of the Soil and Water Conservation. And like I said, Sarah's Kenai Feed is kind of the clearinghouse.
Perfect.
To pick those items up and rent them.
I saw some tomatoes that were showing up on the Facebook page of the Garden Club that we got some tomatoes that had problem? Or where did that come from?
Yeah, that was actually one of the things that a listener and a friend of mine had sent me a picture of tomatoes that had these black spots on them. And he said, "Larry, do you know what it is?" And I looked at it, and I thought that one of two things, it looked like there's a thing called bacterial speck and bacterial spot.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, I said, "It looks like bacterial spot to me. And it's a fungal type thing." Mm-hmm. And we've talked before about Casey Matney in our extension center and what a good job they do for us. So I sent that picture to Casey and a picture of the leaves of the plant. I said, "Casey, I think this might be bacterial spot." And it took a day or so, but he got back when he says, "Oh, it's definitely bacterial spot. And it almost looks like your green tomato has like little black sunken pimples on it."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, after I started reading about this, if any of you folks have that problem, you can look at it. But what you need to do in that instance is you've got to carefully remove the plant and try to keep it from touching your other plants that aren't infected. And then do not plant tomatoes in that soil next year.
So it's not something that you can treat with just an oil spray or something.
No,
it is a serious thing that you've got to get out of your garden.
Get rid of that plant. Get rid of, you know, and it's kind of one of those things, you know, most people up here, I don't know of anybody who grows their tomatoes outdoors in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If they do, mm-hmm. then that's news to me. Almost everybody grows them in containers.
Right. So you can manage that bit of
right,
soil.
Right. So one of the recommendations would be, like I said, you get rid of this soil or you don't plant tomatoes in it
mm-hmm.
the next
mm-hmm.
year.
Mm-hmm.
If they're in a container, what I'm going to be doing with that is I'm probably going to be getting rid of that soil.
Yeah.
I might be putting it in a bag, taking it to the dump. Or, you know, one of the things I've done with my soil, if it's got something in it, David,
yeah.
I've thrown it in my burn pile.
Yes, because it'll purify itself through that
yeah,
exercise.
And I'm not necessarily going to use it again, but it's killing anything that might be in there, pests or anything.
Exactly.
You throw it in the pile and
exactly.
and it burns it up.
Well, you know, this has been, you've got a whole, you could spend the rest of the show just dealing with tomato problems, but there's a host of issues that you need to know about how to respond to as an Alaskan gardener, and you probably heard most of them or experienced most of them.
Right, and for instance, this bacterial spot,
mm-hmm.
it is an instance that what causes that is. Goes from about 78 to 86 degrees and high moisture.
Oh.
Too much moisture.
Hot and moist.
Bacterial speck is mm-hmm. a little bit lower temperatures, but they kind of look the same. But anyway, that's where your fans in the greenhouse, you need.
Yeah, air circulation.
You need to get that air circulating in there to keep that moisture level down. And that's what causes our powdery mildew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things people make a mistake sometimes is for plants that are susceptible to powdery mildew is they water at night or late at night
mm-hmm.
When it's cool mm-hmm. and then it's going to be moist. Well, mm-hmm. then that's prime,
yeah.
you know, and one of the ways to prevent that is water your plants in the morning when the sun's out, and if you get some water on the leaves, you get water on the leaves at night, it might sit there for quite a while. Well, during the day when the sun comes out, it's gonna evaporate that off there pretty quick and do that. So those are some of the little tricks you can do to prevent that. And one of the things I was telling David the other day is that one of the things that to use, like for instance for powdery mildew, is you can use a baking soda mix or milk.
I heard a couple of things at Dennis's tour about vinegar and milk
right.
and some things. So, but I've got a call coming in from a granddaughter. I'm heading out of here.
Okay.
And you take over like you have always done very well at. And I'm happy to have spent the small amount of time we did.
A little bit of time. You bet. Yeah. I appreciate you coming on out,
okay.
David. And, yeah, he's got grandparent duties. And from my standpoint, that's one of those important things he needs to do. That's a high priority thing. And, you know, and I will go ahead and tell you that his granddaughter is headed to Washington, D.C. pretty soon. They won a contest, basically. Not well, they were chosen. What they came up with was these water buckets that you put in campgrounds. It's like called a bucket tree. It's called a bucket tree, and there was a sample at the last Wednesday market. David was there with his granddaughter, Caitlin, and it was really cool. But what they're doing is they're putting this together. It's made out of treated 4x4s, and they go up, and the parts that stick up and out like a Christmas tree, they turn a bucket upside down on it, and it's for people that are at some of the campgrounds to have a way to douse their fires. And it's really cool. And like I said, they thought it was such a good idea that she's getting ready to go where there are four Girl Scout troop members, And they're going to D.C. They're going to get go to the White House. They get to go compete on a national basis with this idea. So it's really pretty cool. And kudos to those ladies for coming up with that and figuring out a way to help prevent the wildfires in our area. And one of the things everybody was kind of wondering about that was, well, can't they people just take the bucket? Well, somebody could take the bucket, but, you know, one of the things folks do, too, is they don't, I don't see those kids don't float life vests being taken. Those are usually always on stock. Plus, they got great big stickers on the side of the bucket. So if you see, anybody with a bucket that's talking about the bucket tree, somebody took a bucket, and I don't think anybody's going to do it. But congratulations for them. So anyway, thanks, David, for coming by today. And starting the show off with me, and he's like I said, he's bugging out to do some things with his daughter. So, okay, well, one of the things I want to remind you folks is that email for $100 Kenai Feed gift certificate. All you got to do is send me an email at growingagreenerkenai, all one word, at kdll.org, and give me your name, your address, and your phone number, and you'll be in the drawing for a $100 gift certificate at Kenai Feed. So there I've had, thanks Diane, I see you just put your drawing entry in, and like I said, I'm going to accept these up until August the 2nd, and then I'll announce the winner on the August 3rd show. And once again, we want to really, really, really thank Sarah at Kenai Feeds on supporting KDLL, Growing a Greener Kenai, and the Central Peninsula Garden Club. So thank you so much. Thank you so much, Sarah. We certainly appreciate it. So anyway, one of the things I was talking about when you're looking at pests and when you're looking at, and I talked about this, I think, a couple shows ago. There are so many, some folks really worry about using chemicals in their garden, and we can, you know, like milk is actually not a bad way to control some things. The, you know, milk, it's a high fat content, it's got some key minerals, it's got calcium and magnesium in it, and when that creamy, the fat in the milk gets on a soft-bodied insect, like an aphid, a thrip, or a spider mite, it basically suffocates them. And that's kind of the idea behind some of the other things, maybe some neem oil with little soap gets it to stick to the body of the pest, and it suffocates them. One of the simpler things you can do for aphids in your greenhouse is just spray your plant down with cold water. You know, that's an easy one. It doesn't kill them, but delays them a little bit. It hampers their development. And be sure to get the underside of the leaves. Same way if you're using a milk spray. And, you know, be sure and do that. I know there's a YouTube page I watch where the folks were having aphid problems in their greenhouse, and they put whole milk in one of those foggers, and it basically fogged the milk and coated everything in their greenhouse, and it absolutely took care of all their aphids. Plus, it's going to keep powdery mildew down. But you know, and then when you're doing this, as the milk drips down onto the plant and onto the soil, calcium, magnesium, potassium, and other minerals that are in milk can be absorbed, providing a nice nutrient boost to whatever plant, you know. So a commercial pesticide, though, besides costing a lot more money, it can contaminate the soil around your plants and actually kind of mess things up. Now, one of the things, if you're going to use commercial pesticide or anything like that, is, you know, and I'm going to use Roundup as an example. And I've used that stuff before, And one of the things you notice about that, though, is if you follow the directions, and I haven't used it for quite a few years, but if you follow the directions, wherever you're trying to kill a weed, not too long, they may come back there. That's because it breaks down in nature, and it's got to be reapplied. So that's why a light coating, it's going to come out. But there's other things you can use besides a chemical spray. You know, for instance, one of the things, now it's a lot of work, but one of the things that works really well for weeds and everything is boiling water. And, you know, if you've got a sidewalk or something like that with grass and stuff that's coming up through the cracks of the sidewalk, boy, you boil some water and pour it on there, and that stuff's dead. I mean, it flat is dead. And it's the same way, like I said, we're talking about using vinegar. You can use store-bought vinegar, which is what, about 5%, 3%, 5%, basically acetic acid. Or you can buy the horticultural vinegar that might be up to 30 to 50%, and then you mix it in water at a ratio that gives you a certain percentage of what you would need to kill the plant. And I think it depends on how vibrant that weed is that you're trying to get rid of. But everything I've read on the milk and water is basically 50% water and 50% milk. And you spray it all right onto the aphids. And like I said, it also works well for powdery mildew. And there's something about the proteins in the milk that prevents the powdery mildew from being able to bloom, that mildew. But be sure you're watering early in the morning if you've got a damp, shadowy spot. Watering at night where it stays in the shadows and stays, it might be a little cooler. That is just a recipe for powdery mildew. So give it a try. I've had a few aphids in my greenhouse, and I actually have decided what I was doing is, like I mentioned before, I was just spraying them down with my hose. They're on my green pepper plants, my bell peppers, but they're not anywhere else. You know, so I go out and I always spray down my pepper plant with cold well water, and it washes them off, and they're not there. And then maybe, 2, 3, 4, 5 days later even. But I think I'm going to go ahead and give the milk a try. I haven't tried it yet, but I'm going to give that a shot here pretty soon and do that one. So what are some of the best ways to water those tomatoes? Before I do that, before I forget, I want to let you know that when I was at the Garden Club plant sale, I bought a nice indeterminate tomato. They were basically cherry tomatoes. I can't remember the name of it right now, but it had grown. It was maybe 2 feet tall, and they had it in the container and had a little stick in there to hold it up and everything. Well, I got it home, and I had it in my greenhouse, and I was getting ready to plant it in a spot in one of my beds. And I dropped it, and it broke the stalk off right at the base. And I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. So what I did was, where I was going to planted it in the back part of one of the beds, what I did was I scooped out with my hand a big hole in the dirt, and then I filled it with water, and I let it soak in. I filled it with water again, I let it soak in. Then the soil that I pulled out of that hole, I put it back in, watered it in again, and I mean, I really flat out soaked it. It was soaked. So anyway, I took that plant, I cut the bottom off because it had kind of torn the skin of the stalk and everything. I cut it off at a 45 degree angle, and I just stuck that thing right in that ground. I took a couple of the lower leaves off, and I stuck it down in there probably a good 8 inches. And I'll tell you what, that thing is growing fantastic. You know, those little hairs that are on those tomatoes, those will turn into roots. And I tell you what, I was disappointed at first, but now that thing is growing like crazy. I've got it supported. It's got a ton of flowers on it. And I'll tell you what, I'm looking forward to hopefully getting a good tomato harvest off of it. And as I told you folks before I got started due to some illness, I got my garden and everything started a little bit late this year. But I'm starting to get tomatoes on mine. And I'll tell you what, that kind of showed me I've never done that before. I mean, I've always, you know, you can stick that tomato stalk in a glass of water or something like that, a jar, and it'll start to take root, and then you plant it. In fact, that's how my neighbor Mike, who's a wonderful gardener, he gave me a tomato plant that he had going in a jar of water. And I've got that in the greenhouse. It's getting tomatoes on, and it's doing well. So anyway, that was something I thought was really cool. I'm thinking, well, if it's going to work to put a tomato stalk right down in a glass of water, then how is it any different putting it in just super saturated soil that's basically soil in water, almost mud? Well, I'll tell you what, it worked. It worked, it worked, it worked, and I've been taking care of it. And I told you folks before on my plants, my pepper plants, my tomato plants, my squash plant that's in the greenhouse, I use my hand when I plant them, and I dig a moat around the plant. You know, so the plant itself is almost like on a little mound of soil, but then around the plant, you know, and maybe not real far, but, you know, if you've, you know, maybe 4 or 5 inches out from the stalk of the plant, and that's where I water, that's where I put my fertilizers, be it a chemical fertilizer or an organic fertilizer, and I mix it up in that moat, and then I put that water in when I'm watering it, and it doesn't get on the leaves, it doesn't anything like that. That water is around the plant and goes straight down to the roots. Now, that's one of the things to let you know, too, that the tomatoes, they like, most plants need to search for water. You know, you can actually overwater and underwater a plant. So one of the best ways, like I said, I'm not going to focus on this too much, but one of the best ways to water tomato plants growing in the ground, if you're growing them in the ground, one of the biggest mistakes often made is actually watering too often and too much. Now, I will qualify that with depending on where you live. When we lived back in the Midwest and it was 100 degrees and 90% humidity, 90 degrees and 90% humidity, with no rain, we watered the garden every day, every single day, because the plants needed it. But up here, it's just a little bit, it's a little bit different. So you got to be careful of that. So anyway, when you're watering in-ground tomatoes, one of the secrets of that is to water less often, but more thoroughly. You know, so you give them a good, heavy water, and then don't water for a while. Let them seek out some of that water deep down so the roots can drive deep into the soil, and instead they can stay up close to soak in constant moisture. That can actually harm the tomato plant in a couple of ways. And what it does is the plant can develop fewer roots, and it means there's less ability for the plant to take in nutrients and moisture. But the shallow roots also allow the plant to dry out quickly in the hot, and when it's hot. So I do that in my greenhouse. I've got my plants, my tomatoes are actually, they're not in baskets, they're not in a grow bag or anything. They're in a bed that I've got that's about 2 foot deep. So it's basically like planting them directly in the ground, but they just happen to be in the greenhouse. So I don't water them that often, but I give them a good solid water. And like I said, I fill that moat up with water, and then it soaks in. And then I fill that moat up again, and it soaks in. And then, boy, unless the sun is really out, I go out and I stick my finger down in there. And if they're nice, if they're in good shape, I don't water them. Watering too much can also be the same as watering not enough. And sometimes the symptoms are the same. You know, you can get drooping leaves. They'll change color. The plant starts to weaken with yellow, or the leaves will curl. And it's they can become the plants can become waterlogged. So you want to let those things be in some good, clear, clean, moist soil. And then one of the other things that, and I'm sure all you gardeners know this, that too much water can also lead to your tomatoes cracking and splitting on the vine. It's because there's so much moisture, and so much moisture can go up into the tomato that it can't grow fast enough to take it, and then that makes the skin split on that tomato. So you need to be very careful of that. But when you're watering, and it's, some of this stuff goes for tomatoes that are grown in containers too. So if you've got your tomato in a container, because there's pretty limited soil space, sometimes they do need watered almost every day in the summer. It depends on where you've got them. If they're in a greenhouse, they can potentially dry out a lot faster. And sometimes you need to water them twice a day, but you need to be careful not to overwater. So how do you know how to do that? It's just experience. So one of the best ways is to use an inexpensive soil moisture meter probe. Now, I told you the other day that I had one and I didn't like it. I'm going to look at another one. It was also supposed to read pH, and I just don't think it worked very well. I tried a lot of experiments with it in different pH soils and with different moistures, and it always seems like it read the exact same thing. You know, so the moisture for tomato plants actually should be between maybe 40% on the low end and 80% on the high end, keeping it somewhere in the middle. But not the best thing is if your pots, you're growing in pots or grow bags, have good drainage. If the plant can't shed that excess water, it will definitely suffer. Now, one of the things that I can't remember if I've mentioned to you folks before, but when I grew tomatoes back in the Midwest, I grew them, and I grew tomatoes in a steel barrel that was cut basically in half. And I, for my soil, I went to, can't remember their name, where I went to an acquaintance's horse feedlot and just scooped up a bunch of straw and horse manure and soil and everything. And it basically was mostly composted. And that's all I grew my tomatoes in. Well, I had to, back in the Midwest on the south side of the house, I had to water them at least twice a day. I would water them before I went to work till the water rolled out the bottom of the barrel. And then I watered them that evening when I got home from work, same way. I had to do it because there just wasn't space for water to stay. And I knew it wasn't going to be excess water because it was running out. So anyway, I grew tomatoes. I've got a picture, and I'll try to think to put it on the Growing a Greener Kenai Facebook page for you to see it. My wife's standing by the plants, and my plants grew up. They made it up about 14 feet. I had an eye bolt with some lines down to the barrel for the plants to grow up. They were indeterminates for them to grow up those. Well, they got all the way up to the soffit of the second story of our house, the fascia board and the soffit, and they kept going up taller and taller and taller. And they went up, got tall enough, they fell over. You know, so my tomatoes that year, they grew up, they were like 17 to 18 feet tall. I was picking tomatoes out of the second story window of our house. And I'll tell you what, it worked great. I didn't fertilize those all summer. And that goes back to, like we've said before, and for you folks that are from the Midwest, it is so much easier. If you've got a yard in the Midwest, you dig a hole in it and plant a tomato in it, it's going to grow. For the most part, it is going to grow. So, but we're getting back, we're growing tomatoes in Alaska here. So one of the best things you can do when you are watering your tomato plants is don't forget to keep them powered up. And I mean powered up by a little fertilizer. So you can use, I do this about every other week, maybe every 10 days to 2 weeks. with a light dose of fertilizer, and it keeps them healthy. It keeps them producing, and there's a bunch of different kinds out there. And one of the things I put in mine here the other day was I've got it's basically for flowers, but I gave it to my tomatoes and my potatoes. I've selected that fertilizer. It's got a lot of phosphorus and some potassium in it. Now, the big number is the phosphorus. The stuff I've got is 958-8. So it's got big phosphorus numbers in it. And that's a good key to make more and more blooms and develop fruit. So you want something with 2 to 3 times the amount of fertilizer after they start growing. And I don't use the full strength. As I told you before, I don't use the full strength, but I use about 1/2 to 3/4 strength when I'm doing that. And I do that with the flowers, too. This is a fertilizer for bloom, and I can't think of the name of it right now, but I got it locally, but I just can't remember where I got it. So anyway, I do that, and each time I water my tomatoes and my pepper and everything, I water with this fertilized water. And it's made a big difference. I've got a ton of blooms. It looks like it's doing its trick on helping my tomato plants. Like I said, I got them in late, but so far things are going pretty good with the garden. My outdoor garden, like I said, even though getting it in late, I've still got plenty of time. My broccoli is doing well. It's just now starting to form some heads. And some of you gardeners that have had your stuff out a long time, like when we were at Dennis's house the other day on his tour, he's been harvesting broccoli already. Well, I'm not even close to that. But he got his out pretty early. But that's one of the nice things is there's still plenty of time in the season for me to get a good broccoli harvest. I think it's going to be questionable on carrots. I got them out late. They take a little bit longer. They're growing great, but it's just a matter of how much time is left for them to form. I keep a yellow squash plant in the greenhouse. It's doing wonderful. We have harvested squash off that, fried it up here the other day, and it was absolutely wonderful. And I've got a ton more yellow squash on it. I've got some zucchini squash outdoors in those oval waterers that farmers use or folks use for their sheep or their cattle or whatever. A friend found it at the dump, and he brought it home. Somebody had shot holes in it. Well, it's not any good really for using for water, so I put a bunch of composted soil in it, and I've got the soil level down a little bit from the edge of maybe almost a 10 inches down from the edge of that water, and I've got some squash plants in there, and they seem to be liking that pretty well. They're on the sunny side of the garden. They get good sun when the sun's out. It's keeping them warm, and they're doing okay there. Everything else is doing good. My cauliflower is same way, put in late, but it's doing okay. And like a lot of you folks, you should be harvesting radishes several times already. I just cleaned out a bed and planted some more yesterday. Should be plenty of time to get another good radish harvest. A Swiss chard is up, not ready to harvest yet. Beets are looking good. Carrots are looking good. I was out. My wife brought this to my attention. I hadn't paid much attention to it, but we have wonderful crop of hasscap berries this year. And I'll tell you what, it looked like they were ready to pick. A lot of good purple berries on there, but I picked a couple and they were really sour. And you know, when those are ready to harvest, they literally will just fall off the stem. Well, I had to pull kind of hard on that, so they're not quite ready yet, but they're close. They are very close. So anyway, one of the things, too, to let you know, we were talking about tomatoes, is, like I said, I've got the moat around there. And in addition to basically a 1/2 to 3/4 mix of the 958-8, I use a little bit of an organic solid fertilizer, you know, granular fertilizer. And it's a, but it's not much. It's like a, it's like 4-3-4 or something like that. I will mix that in around with the in the moat too, and I use that, and it it seems to be working okay, and I don't do that every time I water. You know, like I said, if they do need more water than once every 10 days or 2 weeks, I don't put that stuff in there every time. I do water with the 958-8 or just, you know, the different varieties of liquid fertilizer, maybe a little fish fertilizer if you want to. Same way, always do a partial percentage. Don't ever do a full one. At least I don't want to over fertilize. Anyway, I want to remind you folks of the drawing for a $100 Kenai feed gift certificate. Be sure to I'm getting some emails here. Be sure to send in to growingagreenerkenai, all one word, at kdll.org. Give me your, put your name, your address, and your phone number. And on the next show, coming up on August 3rd, I'll announce winner. You got 2 weeks to do this. I'm going to accept up till August 2nd entries. And go ahead and send that to me, and you'll be in the running for a $100 gift certificate at Kenai Feed, courtesy of Sarah Donchi at Kenai Feed. A great place to check out at least and see if they've got what you might need for your garden or for your farm. One of the other things I told you I was going to start doing, and I'll put this on the Facebook page when I get home, is some recipes. There's one recipe that my wife and I just absolutely love. It's basically like a bean recipe, and almost everything in this recipe, with the exception of Parmesan cheese, you can, it all can come out of your garden. If you've got, if you're ready, if you got, you put butter beans in it, you put green beans, it's a cold salad, green beans in it, you got little tomatoes in it, basil, some of the other spices, you've got onion. We like to use red onion in ours. You mix all that up, put a little vinegar in there, and I'll tell you what, it makes a fantastic cold salad. I mean, it is absolutely wonderful. But I'll put the recipe on the website or on the Facebook page when I get home, and I think you'll really, I think you'll really enjoy it. It's a great cool salad. And it's our favorite. And like I said, except for the Parmesan cheese, unless you make your own cheese, literally everything that you are putting in that salad basically comes from, can come from your own garden if you're growing all those things. Well, all right, folks. Wow. You know what that sound is. That's a little bit of Octopus's Garden. And that means we're down to the last 2 minutes of the show. Had fun today. I want to thank David for coming by. Dennis, if you're out there, I'd love to get you on the show a little bit later on talking about getting perennial flowers started. That's one of those things maybe that happens a little more in the fall, except for planting bulbs are typically planted in the fall. So I'll give you a buzz, Dennis. Like I said, I hope you're listening. We'll get you out there. Don't forget about the Harvest Moon Festival coming up, the picnic, the slash piles to open, the 4-H. And, I hope everyone's having a good time with their garden. We finally got some good rain. And, boy, I'll tell you what, it was some much-needed rain. Definitely helped my outdoor garden, and I'm assuming it helped yours, too. So, anyway, please don't forget about the Kenai Feed $100 gift certificate giveaway. Send me that email at growingagreenerkenai@kdll.org. And once again, thanks, Sarah, for Kenai Feed for supporting KDLL, supporting the Garden Club. We certainly appreciate it. And I actually will be out there pretty soon because I need a couple bales of straw to use in the garden and around. So All right, folks. Well, this is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, KenaiSoul.net. I will be back on August the 3rd. Thanks for listening. Have a great day and good gardening.